The reading's taken this morning from Isaiah chapter 7, and we're looking at verses 1 to 16. The sign of Emmanuel. When Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, was king of Judah, King Rezin of Aram, and Pekah of Ramalia, king of Israel, marched up to fight against Jerusalem, but they could not overpower it. Now the house of David was told, Aram has allied itself with Ephraim. So the hearts of Ahaz and his people were shaken, as the trees of the forest are shaken by the wind. Then the Lord said to Isaiah, go out, you and your son Shear Jashub, to meet Ahaz at the end of the aqueduct on the upper pool on the road to the washerman's field. Say to him, be careful, keep calm, and don't be afraid. Do not lose heart because of these two smouldering stubs of firewood. Because of the fierce anger of Rezin and Aram and of the son of Remaliah. Aram, Ephraim, and Remaliah's son have plotted your ruin, saying, let us invade Judah, let us tear it apart and divide it amongst ourselves. Make the son of Tabeel king over it. Yet, this is what the sovereign Lord says. It will not take place. It will not happen. For the head of Aram is Damascus. The head of Damascus is only Rezin. Within 65 years, Ephraim will be too shattered to be a people. The head of Ephraim is Samaria. Excuse me. The head of Samaria is only Remaliah's son. If you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. Again, the Lord spoke to Ahaz. Ask the Lord your God for a sign, whether in the deepest depths or in the highest heights. But Ahaz said, I will not ask, I will not put the Lord to the test. Then Isaiah said, hear now, you house of David, is it not enough to try the patience of men? Will you try the patience of my God also? Therefore the Lord himself will give you a sign. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and will call him Emmanuel. He will eat curds and honey when he knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right. But before the boy knows enough to reject the wrong and choose the right, the land of the two kings you dread will be laid to waste.
Thank you, Pat. One of the things that seems to get pulled out of storage in the attic at Christmas, along with the lights and the tinsel, are the prophets from the Old Testament. Readings from Micah and Isaiah are found in Advent and Christmas services in seeming abundance following 11 months of scarcity. Even the world-famous Nine Lessons and Carols from King's College, Cambridge, has two readings from Isaiah in it. I'm, of course, jesting, but perhaps we do relegate the Old Testament prophets by highlighting them less than we should do in the rest of the year. But here in this Advent, we're going to journey with Isaiah over these first three Sundays of the season and see how his words of prophecy to God's people 700 years before the birth of Jesus might guide us in our waiting and preparedness this Advent. And we begin by taking Isaiah out of the attic and reflecting on our reading from chapter 7 of his prophecy. Isaiah was a prophet in the southern kingdom of Judah during the 8th century BC. And his prophetic ministry coincided with the reigns of King Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. And as in our current age, this was a period of political instability in the Middle East, with many neighbouring countries and empires warring, seeking to gain the ascendancy. And Judah was a minor power in this period, especially compared to the great Assyrian Empire, which was located in what we would call modern-day Iraq. And it is this looming, if unmentioned, presence of Assyria and Judah's relationship with it that is the subtext of our reading. But it's a subtext that becomes text in the parallel account that is found in 2 Kings chapter 16, verses 5 to 9. Then Rezin, king of Aram, and Pekah, son of Remaliah, king of Israel, marched up to fight against Jerusalem and besieged Ahaz, but they could not overpower him. At that time, Rezin, king of Aram, recovered Elath for Aram by driving out the people of Judah. Edomites then moved into Elath and have lived there to this day. Ahaz sent messengers to say that Tiglath-Pileser, king of Assyria, I am your servant and vassal. Come up and save me out of the hand of the king of Aram and the king of Israel who are attacking me. And Ahaz took the silver and gold found in the temple of the Lord and in the treasuries of the royal palace and sent it as a gift to the king of Assyria. The king of Assyria complied by attacking Damascus and capturing it. He deported its inhabitants to Kir and put Rezin to death. King Ahaz aligned himself with the mighty Assyrian Empire in order to ward off the threat of Rezin, king of Aram, in what we would call today Syria, and Remaliah, the king of the northern kingdom of Israel. This is what he did. But in our reading from Isaiah chapter 7, this is what God is warning Ahaz not to do. Isaiah comes to meet Ahaz, and the king is inspecting the watercourse into Jerusalem in preparation for a siege. And Isaiah brings his son with him to this. Ahaz is a frightened man. His kingdom is under threat from these two smaller northern nations. And when you're afraid, you don't make good decisions. Ahaz is about to ask the Assyrian Empire for help. But with that request will come a host of other problems. And God knows the way that Ahaz's thinking is going. So he sends Isaiah to bring his words to him. And God's words are, be careful, keep calm, don't be afraid. How many political leaders today do we wish had heard those words before making dubious decisions in their fear? Be careful, keep calm, don't be afraid. And God, through Isaiah, goes on to say that the nations of Syria and Israel are not a problem. They are nothing but a smouldering lump of firewood left over. They're nations whose existence will be snuffed out. In 65 years, a long human lifetime at the time, the northern kingdom of Israel will cease to exist. And in verse 9, the key words are found for Ahaz. If you do not stand firm in your faith, you will not stand at all. These are words calling Ahaz to reconsider, to reassess, to put aside his fear and to fall back on God. To stand firm, entrust his security and future into God's hands. Be attentive to God, to counteract that panic he's feeling, to counteract that foolish action he's about to take. If Ahaz puts his trust in God, he can have the confidence that no matter how desperate the immediate circumstances seem, God will see Judah through. And God doesn't leave it there. He takes it a step further. He offers Ahaz a sign. How many times would we love God to give us a sign to confirm his promises to us in difficult times? But here he gives one to Ahaz. But Ahaz says he doesn't want a sign. With false piety, he says it'd be putting God to the test, even though it's God offering him one. And God, through Isaiah, offers that a child will be born. Now, God's words of promise through Isaiah have a double horizon. And by that I mean that they have an immediate understanding and relevance for Ahaz and the situation he was facing. But there was also a longer term understanding and relevance. The child was said to be born to a young woman of marriageable age, or as our Bibles translate it, a virgin. Now, the identity of this mother is almost incidental in the context of Ahaz's situation, but in the longer term, understanding and relevance of this word virgin comes to pass when Mary becomes pregnant. And then there is this child whose name is Emmanuel, which means God is with us. This child would be a sign that God was with Judah in the midst of their struggles. They don't have to fear about Syria and Israel. They could trust God as their hope and security. This child would be a visible sign of the promise that God has made a reality. If you read the two books of Kings in the Old Testament, one of the constant refrains is that the kings did evil in the sight of the Lord. And this was said of Ahaz. However, Ahaz has a son. And in 2 Kings 18 verse 3, it says this of Ahaz's son Hezekiah. He did what was right in the eyes of the Lord. Despite his father's mistakes, despite some mistakes that Hezekiah made, Hezekiah walked closely with God and showed that God was with Judah. He seemed to know right from wrong. He reigned in a period of prosperity and religious renewal in Judah, a time of curds and honey. It was in this period when Israel, the northern kingdom, was laid to waste and Judah was able to withstand the Assyrian Empire. So it could be that Hezekiah was the promised Emmanuel to Ahaz. But there is also that future significance to those words. Significance that would not be revealed for another 700 years. That God was not just going to be with his people Israel, but he was going to be with all of humanity. A child born in a manger and named Jesus. In these words of God through Isaiah to Ahaz, in the midst of this situation 2,700 years ago or so, we can find words of hope and assurance that stretch across the centuries and can speak into our lives today. That promise to Ahaz of a child called Emmanuel, the promise of a God who is with us, is also a promise of God who is with us in our lives. So what might that mean? It means that God is with us in history. The promise that God made to Ahaz was at a very specific time in history. When pressure was on Judah from all sides, when important political decisions were going to be made. If Ahaz had chosen a different course, if he'd chosen not to get into bed with the Assyrians, Judah's fortunes could have been very different. They could have shown greater trust in God. And this was one of the many opportunities that Judah and Israel had to turn back to trust in God, yet they didn't. God acts at significant points in history. Paul writes in Galatians of the birth of Jesus, when the set time had fully come, God sent his son born of a woman. Jesus was born at just the right time. With the Roman Empire being established, communications were never better. Words of the gospel spread rapidly. Jesus was born at just the right time in history. Jesus came to be with us in person at the right time. And of course, God has never left us in history. All through history, God has been with us. When human history has been good or bad, God has been there. In times of war or other major devastations, church attendance often rises. And it's not that God only turns up at these times. God is always there. Humanity simply gets switched on to God's presence in these moments. God is with us in history. And it's not only in times of international and national crisis that we can know the reality of God being with us. We can know God with us in our individual lives at times of crisis as well. Jesus is not only the cosmic God with us, he is also the personal God with us. I'm sure in this room there are stories when we have gone through difficult times, we know how true it is that God has been revealed as the one who is with us. He's not distant and remote. Jesus is the sign in our lives that God is with us. God is with us in history. God is also with us in our fear. Ahaz was afraid. Afraid of this threatening northern neighbours, afraid of doing things wrong, afraid of an upset population. Yet God came to him in the midst of his fear and spoke those familiar words that are littered all through the story of the Bible. Don't be afraid. Those words often come when angels are on the scene. But they're also needed because fear is so much part of the human condition. As humans, we can be engulfed in our fears about the decisions we have made or not made. Fear about the well-being of ourselves or our loved ones. Fears about ours or the world's future. Fears about how the world is changing in ways we do not like or cannot control. We, like Ahaz, will not make good decisions when we are afraid. We will react. We will choose a short-term fix over a long-term wise decision. The physiological response to fear can be called fight or flight. We react in anger or we run away when adrenaline surges through our bodies. God, though, says in the midst of our fear, I am with you. I can help you. I can help you see the way forward. I can help you make wise decisions. I can make sure you build for the long term rather than settle in the short term. In the Christmas story, the angel said to Mary, do not be afraid, just as he was going to tell her that her life was going to take completely a different direction. Instead of having life go as she planned, she was going to become an unmarried teenage mum. Mary needed to know God was with her in her fear. And she heard these words and chose to believe them. God is with us in our fears. But we need to give ourselves over to him in our fears. We need to submit to his spirit coming into our lives and working within us to transform us. So we don't listen to our fear, but instead listen to the words of God. It's a choice we have to make. And it's a choice that Ahaz ultimately failed to make. He chose to align himself with the Assyrian Empire rather than with God's way forward. But we can make a different choice in how we live. We can choose to listen to the voice of God and the way he leads instead of the way of fear. God is with us in our fear. Around Christmas time, we tend to remember the phrase, God is with us, more than we do in the rest of the year. We pull it out of the attic like we do the Old Testament prophets and our Christmas decorations. But the God who is with us is never seasonal. He never comes and goes. The God who is with us is always with us. Christmas, Easter, summer holidays, and any other time. The realized promise of Emmanuel, Jesus, the sign that God offered and delivered on. The God who has come to us as one of us is the everyday reminder, the everyday presence of the God who is always with us. We just need to see and trust in him. Let us pray. God with us, Emmanuel, in our history, in our fear, may we know you, the God who is always with us. Amen.